It's Road Saturday on College Football Game Day. All of our local teams are on the road for big matchups, important matchups. Everybody ranked, everybody with some goals in sight, everybody with a pretty much a smile on their face as they get set for today's action, which opens up across the nation at 11 a.m. our time, and included in that line of games is one in Austin, Texas, where my partner Stan Weber joins me now. A beautiful and fun part of the country. I haven't been there in a while, but I always enjoyed when I did go there. And Stan, it's football time early in the morning with the garage tailgating in order already, Stan?
Yeah, so they do a great job. This is a big city with the university and 40 acres, as they call it, in a big city. So, yes, you got to use the garages to tailgate. You got to get after it. But it's supposed to be a beautifully sunny day here. But right now it's a little foggy, it's a little sleepy in the morning here as a 11 o'clock kick. You know, teams are ready for 11 o'clock games now, Danny. It's not like the old days, but still a little sleepy feeling here as over 100,000 fans are going to be here. And you talked about the local three teams. All of them are on the road. So tough duty today for them. Big opportunities in all three cases. And one of them here against K-State playing the number 7 team in the country, the Texas Longhorns. So big-time football. Texas with Steve Sarkisian is playing their best football now. It's the best start that he's had. It's the best start Texas has had in a long time. And going to winning at Alabama was a big statement about how good this football team can be.
Certainly was, and we've got to Texas in a position where they're obviously got their designs on leaving this league with a trophy in hand. And Kansas State, they're playing their best football, I would say, as well. Although the last couple of opponents haven't been among the best opponents, Kansas State has thoroughly taken care of business.
Yeah, you look at the national statistics, and they're showing up in a lot of places. And the big ones that I love, Danny, as you know, is third down conversions. K-State's at 55% third down conversions on offense, fourth best in the country. They are giving up only 29% third down conversions, sixth best in the country. They've basically played shutout-type football, gave up a field goal against TCU, but otherwise have just totally shut the door. Their red zone defense has been off the charts, something I really have never seen before, Danny. Only 30% of the time when teams get to the 20-yard line or closer do they score touchdowns against K-State so far. So right now they're hitting on all cylinders, but you're right. This is a ramp-up game. It's the first time K-State has played against a ranked opponent. So you got to step it on up, and the Longhorns have had their number six straight times. Texas has beaten the Wildcats.
We'll break this down in further detail a little bit later on, but this series has been kind of weird because for a while Kansas State kind of had Texas's number, and then it's turned on a dime, and now, as you mentioned, Kansas State has been losing on a regular basis to the Texas Longhorns, so kind of a last shot for Kansas State. They probably won't play Texas for a long, long time.
Yeah, in 2011, the last time K-State won here was their fourth straight time to beat Texas. Second straight hit Texas, and then in 2012, they won again for a fifth straight time. But things have turned around. The overall series is Texas 13, K-State 10. But crazily, it has been K-State early in the Big 12 years, and then now it is in Texas. And Ricky Williams is going to be honored today as a Heisman Trophy winner. Remember 1998, the first time they played as Big 12 opponents, K-State stuffed the eventual Heisman Trophy winner and made a big statement about how good they're going to play football against Texas head-to-head. And it stayed that way for a while, but the Longhorns are playing great now.
Game sequence out today as we've got an 11 and a 2:30 for Missouri and then 6 o'clock for Kansas. Coverage starts right here on Sports Radio 810 at 4:30. So everybody will be able to kick back, relax, and if they get cooperation from the other members of their family, can watch college football of the local variety all day long.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Let's enjoy it.
Yeah, let's enjoy the college football, and Stan will rejoin me in a couple of minutes. We've got a great show lined up for today as we will visit with Bill Hancock, the head of the College Football Playoff Committee. It's his last year of doing that, and then he'll head off into retirement. No replacement has been announced yet. He's seen the college football playoff through various permutations, and Todd Lebo will join me later on as well to break down some of the national games and talk about the college football scene in general. So it's a good show today on a cloudy day here, but the cloudy day here doesn't matter because it's Ames, Iowa, it's Athens, Georgia, it's Austin, Texas for the locals for the three games that we have lined up in college football for the local squads, and there's a good variety of national games as well. We'll touch on all that right here on College Football Game Day on Sports Radio A10 WHB. Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio A10 WHB. Stan will be back, and we'll start breaking down all the local games, starting with the Missouri game in just a few minutes. But let's break it down with the principals who will be the leaders in today's game. That would be one Eli Drinkwitz and one Kirby Smart as well, and what they think of this particular team, Georgia, a particular game. Georgia is just over a 2-touchdown favorite, depending on how the vagaries swing the last few days. And Missouri, of course, coming off the bye week, Georgia coming off a big win against Florida. And Eli Drinkwitz says as much as you try, you can't avoid the outside noise about what's at stake against Georgia.
I don't think you can ignore anything this day and age because it's just like putting your head in the sand. But, you know, I talked to him really on Tuesday of last week about irregardless after the game, it's not anything that we can control, but there's going to be two different narratives. The narrative is going to be if we lost, the season's over and there's nothing left to play for because of what was at stake in the game, which we know is not true. And if we win, we're going to be assumed that we're going to win the East, which is not true because we still have three games left versus SEC opponents. And so irregardless of the outcome of the game, the job of the media and social media is to create narratives. Our job is to ignore them and try to be 1-0.
Yes, indeed, and I've said it before, is it just me? I think that Eli Drinkwitz sounds a little bit like vintage Roy Williams from back in the day. Maybe a little more cleaned up than that, but always reminiscent of it to me. And the Tigers trying to pull the big upset today. They have had a fine season. They're bowl eligible already. Things have gone in the way that they would like to have come into this game with all the possibilities in front of them. And Drinkwitz knows the Tigers played well against Georgia last year, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything this particular time around.
I remember the crowd being really awesome. I remember us playing pretty well in the first half. I remember us not finishing in the red zone, which ultimately cost us an opportunity to win the game. I remember some self-inflicted penalties, but there's certainly a lot of things that we can control and do better. But that was a really good football team last year led by an excellent quarterback who played well in the fourth quarter, and we just weren't able to match it. But I don't really take anything from last year's game. We're two totally different teams.
Georgia, obviously, is Georgia, and they've become the new Alabama, basically. They haven't lost a regular season game since 2020. That's a 35-game regular season win streak. That dates back to a loss against Florida in 2020. And Kirby Smart, yet to lose to the Tigers. He has gone undefeated in 7 shots against the Missouri Tigers. And Drinkwitz feels like that being a roller coaster person is not the way to coach teams, although I think some might argue that that necessarily isn't the personality he's striving for. But anyway, he says, no matter who you're playing, you've got to stay consistent.
Whether it's playing at Georgia or playing at Vanderbilt or playing at home versus South Dakota, like that's the formula that it takes to win. So it's not like you can go in there and say, all right, guys, all these previous games, I know we said it, but we didn't mean it. But this game, we really mean you got to force takeaways. Like that ain't how this works. Like you got to play your game. You know we're going to try to force takeaways. They're not going to try to give them to us. So really, in these kind of games, in these style of games, it usually comes down to little details and fundamentals that you practice over and over again that you got to execute.
The battle at quarterback will obviously be an important one. It always is in modern football, and Georgia's quarterback is Carson Beck. He probably has played a little bit better than most people were anticipating coming into the season. The same could be said for Brady Cook, obviously, on the Missouri side. So two quarterbacks who've probably exceeded expectations. Now, Beck won't have his top weapon, that's tight end Brock Bowers, around to help him out in this particular game. He went down with a high ankle sprain against Vanderbilt last month, and he is easily their best player, but they've played well on offense since he went out. And Carson Beck has answered questions of playing without him. He went 19 for 25 passing with 315 yards and 2 touchdowns last week against Florida. And as far as Kirby Smart is concerned, he knows he'll be going against a quarterback in Beck, who Beck will be going against quarterback Brady Cook, somebody who can certainly put up great numbers just like that, has done so, and he's got a lot of respect, does Kirby Smart, for the Mizzou quarterback.
Their quarterback is very experienced, which is the number one quality you look for. They're using him and his legs and his ability to run really well. He's a competitor. He's fast on tape, and he's playing at a high level, and he's doing it with some weapons offensively.
And he's been more than just somebody who has competed or been a competitor or been a Mizzou guy. He's been excellent. I don't think there's any other way to put it. Obviously, he's had occasional moments in a loss that were troubling, and two of his three interceptions came in a game that they did lose, but he's completing almost 70% of his passes. His average per attempt is very good at 9.3, and I don't think anybody really understands the NCAA quarterback rating. His rating is 166.2, which would be higher than perfect if it was an NFL quarterback rating. And I don't even know what the maximum is, like 20,000 or something, literally. But I think anywhere, obviously 166.2 must be good because he's thrown 15 touchdowns. He only has three interceptions. And obviously his biggest weapon is Luther Burden, and he's gone and targeted him far more than anybody else. He has 61 catches for 905 yards. He's averaging almost 15 yards a catch. He's got six touchdowns. He's among the best in the country at his position. And certainly they have done this without sort of going overtly out of their way to focus on him, which I think they were guilty of in his freshman year. But they've gotten, obviously, some good contributions from other people, too. Mookie Cooper, Theo Weiss, they've both been very, very good. And Marquise Johnson also has been a big play receiver for them. He has caught only nine balls, but he's averaging 30 yards per catch. So Missouri has played very, very well, and their last game before the bye was another one to give them great confidence. They won easily against South Carolina, a team that's lost a lot of games this year, but most of the time they've been competitive. Not so against the Tigers, and ever since they got down 14-0 against Kentucky, it has been good news for the Tigers. That came off on the hands of a loss to LSU, and they're down 14-0 at home. It looked like maybe things were starting to go a little bit sideways for the Tigers, but they came roaring back and won the Kentucky game rather handily by 17 points, and then easily handled business against South Carolina. They took their foot off the gas a little bit in the second half in that game, but they won it by a count of 34-12. And today, with a big spotlight on him against Georgia, the number two team in the nation, they will go at it at 2:30. And the Tigers have everything in front of them now. The wins at home against South Carolina, the win at home, and after the loss against LSU and sandwiched around the road game against Kentucky, leaves them with four games left. If they were to take care of business in this game, they would be tied for first in the East with the tiebreaker against Georgia, and then face three good games, but certainly nothing would seem impossible if they went to Georgia and won. And it's going to be a tough, tall task, and we'll break it down with Stan here in a minute. But Tennessee would follow at home. They obviously have played pretty good football this year. Florida looked like they perhaps were reemerging as a program that they would like to be, but they couldn't handle their business in any way against Georgia. The final score didn't even indicate how bad it was for the Gators. And then close against an Arkansas team, which has lost close game after close game this year. There's no guarantees. Arkansas, even though their record is not good, they've played competitive football in just about every one of their games. That game is supposed to be a big rivalry game. I don't know if it really has lived up to the rivalry aspect of it, but they certainly are a dangerous team on that Thanksgiving weekend, the traditional now. I don't know if it's a great tradition or a big tradition, but they do play on the Friday after Thanksgiving. And those are the three games remaining for Missouri after they take on Georgia today. And that is with Georgia as slightly over a two-touchdown favorite as they get set for the matchup at 2:30 today. And, Stan, this one is obviously a daunting task. Georgia is an outstanding team with a lot of talent. Maybe they've are a little less talented than the last couple of years because they've lost so many players to the National Football League over the last couple of years. But this is still a team that's stout on both lines, and their quarterback has been better than expected, as I talked about.
Yeah, Danny. When you talk about the quarterback, you think, hey, maybe that's a weakness because the last guy's won a couple national championships, really played elite football in the big games. And then you go, wait a second. Carson Beck's been throwing for over 300 yards in almost every game recently, completing 73% of his passes, only turned it over four times. So, you know, Georgia has the capability to do so many things, Danny, and they are good at finding your weakness and attacking it. That's what good balanced football is. You're only as good as your weakest link. So if you have a weakness, they'll go find it and beat you, and end of story. The second thing is if they really respect you and are focused and want to play that day, they're probably going to win the ball game. That's one of the big questions today. What's Georgia's mindset? I think Missouri catches them at a pretty good time. Don't you think that the talk on campus all week long has been about that Florida game and how they got after Florida? Every student they talk to, Danny, on campus is saying, hey, here's where I did, partying in Jacksonville. It's a neutral site game, the world's greatest outdoor party, you know, all those things. There's such a great focus on beating Florida. I don't think that they're spending a lot of time worrying about Mizzou because going to a game between the hedges in Athens, Georgia, usually means it's like theater. Let's go watch our team win. If Georgia's focused and really respects Missouri, then they have a big advantage. And obviously the odds say they've got that kind of advantage. But if they don't have that complete focus, Danny, and they had it against Kentucky, okay, and they killed them. They had it against Florida. But, Danny, they didn't have it against South Carolina. And they were trailing at the half, struggling to move the ball. It was midway through the third quarter before they finally caught up with South Carolina. Missouri gets a whole week off to get ready for this game, get rested up. I think that really helps college kids get that extra study time, extra reps to work on what kind of keys they're going to have and what they need to do against Georgia. Maybe you put in some trick plays. And I think a big factor here, Danny, you're only as good as your weakest link. I said Georgia's great at attacking what you do poorly and just taking the game over. If you can't stop the run, they'll run the football, game over. If you have one star player, they'll shut them down, game over. But what I like about Missouri right now is I think that they are a football team that's pretty evenly good across the whole spectrum other than Luther Burden. And if you want to spend a lot of time trying to keep him from getting the football, Danny, they got good receiving core guys to go to as well. So I think Missouri is one of the most balanced teams. If Brady Cook continues to protect the football, throw the ball downfield, and play as well as he has, and Cody Schrader running the football, the line coming off the ball, the defense, where's their weakness? I mean, what player do you say, not too good? I think Missouri's defense is pretty much a good team without superstars. So it's interesting. I think Missouri has a good makeup to be tough on Georgia just because they don't have a weakness that can be attacked. It's like you got to beat our whole football team. Maybe last year's game will give Missouri some confidence because they outplayed Georgia, or maybe it'll get Georgia's attention. They go, oh, so Missouri thinks they can play with us. I'm not sure how that's going to go down, but Georgia's focus is going to be a big part of this.
Well, Georgia has a top 10 matchup as it currently stands against Mississippi to follow, and that game is probably one that, from you know their standpoint, that's a traditional SEC opponent. Missouri's been around for a while now, but they still, I don't think, are really maybe even thought of completely as an SEC team historically. And so maybe that plays into it as well. But I think that the importance all the time in establishing, especially in college football, the running game, and that's a key today. If Missouri gets bullied along the line of scrimmage and they have to rely on Brady Cook, that can be problematical. In the past, we've seen him throw some interceptions. He hasn't done so this year, but it's always important as an underdog, I think, to try and establish something on the ground so you're not just dropping back to pass time after time against the great athletes that Georgia has.
Yeah, I think that's right, Danny. You can get the game squeezed from you so quickly. If they stuff the run and know you're going to have to pass, then they can pass rush with athleticism, and they don't have to send extra guys. You know, then they got all kinds of secondary players. Make sure you can't throw the ball deep. Missouri needs some big plays. They need to protect the football. You know, you can make a scenario over and over again about 15 ways, Danny, of how we can see Georgia controlling this ball game and winning. You know, the question is can Missouri get something done? So let's go back to what you're talking about in that running game. I think we need to define that a little broadly, Danny. The running game can include jet sweep passes where you toss the ball forward to Luther Burden on the run. I think it needs to include the down the line or tunnel screens in that type of game. If you can spread the field and have some of those plays called passing plays, but really all they are is just get the ball to someone, the equivalent of a running play, I would count those as well. Somewhere in that grouping of plays that I just talked about, near the line of scrimmage or in the running game, you got to get something established. Because if you don't, like you said, you can't just throw the ball down after down and beat a Georgia. And if you can't run the football, you can't control the clock at all. The other big thing is just keep Georgia's football team off the field. Limit the number of possessions. What do underdogs want to do? Those kind of formulas. So those things need to be in play. But I tell you, Danny, Missouri, because they're not relying on one single player or component to get it done, they just do it overall. How about their field goal kicker, the thicker kicker? You know, he booted a 61-yarder to beat K-State. How about if he knocks through, you know, some 45- to 50-yard field goals, two or three, where they weren't near the red zone? And you kick a couple of field goals and get six extra points, and then when you get to the red zone, find a way to get touchdowns, right? It's worth four extra points, touchdown versus field goal. But, man, he could boot a couple field goals in. Every point's going to be helpful. Every minute that they stay close, the pressure starts building on Georgia because Georgia's trying to win a national championship, and they're in a contest to be the top four in the country, and not making the SEC title game is a death blow to Georgia right now. I mean, they cannot afford to lose to Missouri because that's an Eastern Division team, and if Missouri is able to win out, they'll be playing a championship game. You've heard talk about how Alabama can still make the college football playoff and everything, and even if they lose to LSU today, and they're talking about, well, they just need to be a part of the SEC championship game and go win that, and that is such a proof that you should be in the college football playoff. Well, same thing with Georgia. They could probably accept a loss and still make it to the college football playoff, but they need to be playing in the SEC championship game. And the easiest way for them to stub their toe and not do that is lose to Mizzou. So this game has unbelievable importance. How much does Kirby Smart's players respond to that? And, oh, by the way, their best player, maybe the best player in college football, their tight end, is not available right now. Brock Bowers, he is incredible, but injured and not available. I know Georgia has guys to backfill with it, so let's don't cry for the Bulldogs, but losing great players is noteworthy.
And losing great players is something that we don't have to focus on much with our local teams, although Jalen Daniels continues to be out. We'll look at the Big 12 and our local Sunflower State teams who are not in the Sunflower State today. They're in Austin, Texas, where Stan is, and Ames, Iowa, where our coverage right here on Sports Radio 810 of Jayhawks football starts at 4:30 today for a 6 o'clock kickoff. We'll check out the Jayhawks, the Wildcats, and the Big 12 coming up next right here on College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Dan Klinkscale in Austin, Texas. It's Stan Weber. And how's the day developing a little bit later on, Stan? How's the weather look? Good day for football?
Yeah, it's going to be a great day for football. The question is, will the heat come into play? I don't expect it to be, because it'll probably be 80 degrees at the hottest, maybe 75. But it's an early starting day as far as the sun is not out yet. It's cloudy, so I don't think that that's going to be the end result. A little fog type of atmosphere here right now. But Big Noon Saturday is here, that pregame show, not the ESPN version, but the Fox version is here. Joe Klatt is here, the top announcing crew for Fox. So there's some excitement outside the building right now that's really building up because of the national TV pregame show. But I think this is going to be a very good football game. The Longhorn fans are excited about what they have done so far this year. Danny, you keep thinking about what Steve Sarkisian's team has done. He's 20-13 as a head coach here. Last year, 8-5. The year before that, 5-7. But you got to take a quick notice and say, well, maybe this team is a little bit different. They think they are. They're picked first in preseason, right? They started the season ranked 11th in the country. But they've been ranked in the top 10 eight straight weeks. That's the first time that's happened since 2009. Their 7-1 start is the best start at Texas since 2009's 8-0 team. Their 4-1 start is the best that Steve Sarkisian has had and the best since 2018. So they are doing some things that make you wonder, are they taking that next step forward? Are they a little different than the rest of the Big 12 teams? Right now, their Big 12 does not feel that way, right? K-State walking in here and people analyzing this game, getting ready for this early kickoff, a lot of people rooting for K-State probably because they always root against Texas, that kind of mentality. Danny, they are not intimidated by it. They saw Houston play them pretty evenly just a couple of weeks ago. But you got to watch out. Remember what they did to Alabama this year. And think about this from a historical standpoint, Nanny. I think you'll love this. That is the first time when they went and won at number three Alabama that a Texas Longhorn team had gone on the road and won against a number one through three ranked team, another one, two, or three ranked team on the road and won a game in Alabama. That's the first time that's happened for Texas since 1969. Guess what, Danny? It's the game you remember. 1969 at Arkansas, number right. one versus number two. Richard Nixon was there. Mm-hmm. The president came to the game, and he was late getting there. So you know what they did in those days, Danny? They held the kickoff up. They waited until the president could get there. After the game, he anointed Texas with a 15-14 win. It was a two-point conversion and then a touchdown, anointed them a national championship right there. What's interesting is analytics nowadays, Danny, teams go for two early and then say, we're going to set the tone and shock the opponent. You realize Arkansas led the game 14-0. The Longhorns scored and went for two. Why did they go for two? In 1969, what the heck? They did. They pulled to 14-8. During COVID, I watched these games in full, Danny, to bring back great memories, okay? I watched the 71 Nebraska-Oklahoma game, like a four-hour production. It was awesome. But I also watched this game, and I'm going, why didn't you go for two? They went for two on the first touchdown of the fourth quarter. They're now down 14-8, and sure enough, when they scored the touchdown on a fourth down, wishbone, play-action pass to a tight end who caught the ball with, remember the Arkansas fans on the field, Danny? Like cheerleaders on the field. He's making a diving catch down inside the 10. They score a touchdown, kick the PAT, and win 15-14. I thought they would have made the two-point conversion on the second one, but they actually went on the first touchdown. Woo, leading edge stuff from Darryl Royal at that time. So this, back to this Texas team, they're playing better. They've got the physicality. They got an unbelievable offensive line. But one of the questions that we're seeing happening right before our eyes is Quinn Ewers. I thought he was one of the best players who's improved the most, Danny, from last year to this year. One of the most improved players in the country at quarterback. He lost a lot of weight. He took everything seriously. Remember Arch Manning, the most famous signing in college football in a long, long time? That quarterback was coming here. He's on campus, Danny. Mm-hmm. Everyone was wondering, is Arch Manning going to take over for Quinn Ewers? And Ewers said, no way. I'm a veteran, and I'm improved. That has been the Texas quarterback until last game when they went to a redshirt freshman, Malik Murphy. Malik Murphy got all the snaps. Arch Manning has not taken one snap this year for Texas. So it looks like it's going to be a game without Quinn Ewers with Malik Murphy. And there's one of your questions. How much of this winning is Quinn Ewers just doing excellent things, and how much will Texas be able to protect the quarterback? Will K-State be able to put pressure on that quarterback today? A big question in this game.
So tell us a little bit about what you saw with the one game of Malik Murphy. He made a couple of mistakes. They tried to dumb it down for him a bit, and it doesn't look like in any way he's as good a thrower as Quinn Ewers. What does he bring, or what does he bring that might be a little bit different?
Well, he's just not going to be as experienced. He's got a strong arm, and he's a big, big dude. 6'5", 240 pounds. He's taken on an attitude that I'm a little surprised by, and I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying surprised. Remember that word, Danny, not criticized, surprised. When he came out to be the starter for the first time, and he's hardly played this year, right? This is not a guy who's got a lot of plays underneath his belt when Texas was blowing out people. Remember, they had Alabama in a non-con, so they didn't have a bunch of blowout opportunities. He comes out and acknowledges the crowd, starts putting a big smile on his face and kind of dancing around, pointing to the crowd like, let's go, I'm here, and we're going to put on a show today. So he comes in with a lot of bravado. And so I don't know if that is just real confidence that he brings or if it's something that you could break and say, no, 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 dude, you can act like you're really, really confident, but we can do something about that. Big questions today because things went very smoothly last week against BYU. He did what he could. What does he do, Danny? He throws the ball. He doesn't run. He's not a dual-threat quarterback, and I think that really helps K-State because if you can not worry about the quarterback run game, the running game of Texas is very good. You've got to worry about that. But you're talking about this kid. He's going to be back there throwing the football. Could K-State get in a situation where they can get third downs and mediums and longs and decide how they want to pressure this young quarterback? I think that could swing things in K-State's favor. It's one of the ways that K-State could look like they're the better team today against a Texas team that's obviously bigger and stronger, more highly recruited, more stars, and they're four- and five-star type of players. Texas has those advantages. But, you know, he's a quarterback getting ready for his second game. He doesn't run the football. This could be a real pressurized situation for him if K-State can get after the running game. But can you stop this big offensive line of the Longhorns, Dan? He got NFL stars, even though they're youngsters. They got a sophomore, Telvin Banks, was first-team all-conference last year. He can't go to the pros next year even, Danny. He is a killer, and their whole offensive line is really, really good. They run the football at you. They can do it in a predictable fashion, and that's the real way that Texas is able to win games, is just physically dominate up front running the football.
Well, as K-State has morphed through the part of the season, we saw Will Howard coming off a great season last year. Probably didn't play as well as he expected early in the year. Had a bad outing against Oklahoma State when they lost, and a lot of people thought they might be turning the page to the freshman. Well, what has happened is they've turned it into pick your poison. They can go to Will Howard. They have allowed Will Howard to run the football more, but Avery Johnson is there if they want to use him, and it's not as if it's just you know, one guy's bad, the other guy comes in. It's sort of just a feel thing right now.
It absolutely is. They have a plan, a pattern. It seems like they're settling into the third series of the game is when Avery Johnson comes in. So if that's the way K-State goes again, Will Howard starts. Avery Johnson comes in on the third series. And Chris Kleiman and Colin Klein do not know as coaches who's going to play the fourth series. And they're just going to see how it goes. Now think about the difference that these quarterbacks have experienced and why this football team is settled and doesn't care. At Texas Tech, Avery Johnson had the majority of the plays. And it created all kinds of questions in the K-State Nation. Like, is the young guy ready to roll? He broke a K-State record, 5 rushing touchdowns. He was unstoppable. He threw balls that were on a dime. You know, everything went well. So, you know, should he be the quarterback? The K-State coach was like, no. We got 2 quarterbacks we really feel comfortable with. They went into the CCU game. Danny, they switched every other series and lit it up with 41 points. Both guys had unbelievable production. Will Howard seemed to settle down, not be looking over his shoulder, and that was a step forward. Now you go to the next game in Houston. Guess what? It's just the opposite of Texas Tech. Will Howard played, then Avery got his chance, and then Will Howard basically took over the game and played the rest of the way. So, like you said, they're indifferent right now about which way they're going to go when they get things going. But I think the big step for K-State, Danny, is it's hard when you're Will Howard and you have all the off-season accolades of winning a Big 12 championship and being the cover of magazines and all of that, and all of a sudden a lot of people are thinking that maybe midway through the year you shouldn't be the quarterback, that this young superstar, Avery Johnson, should be. And Will was able to bounce through that, survive against TCU, and then he excelled in the last game, Danny. He lit it up. One of the things is, you mentioned he's starting to run the football. If you're going to play K-State quarterback, Danny, you've got to have quarterback run game. You've got to run with physicality. And he did that in the last ball game. He's been very effective running the football. But how about this start last week? Will Howard was 12 of 12 for 140 yards and 2 touchdowns to start the game. So he got off to a great start, really established that he feels comfortable. He and Avery are great friends, and you just don't know which way it's going to be. But like you said, they're going to figure out ways to use both of them, play it by feel. But I think Will Howard running the football stepped things up. And against this Texas defense, I do think you're going to have to throw the football just to, you know, beat your head against the wall and act like you're going to run and overpower Texas all day long. It's probably not going to work. It gives, you know, K-State's got to stick with the run some, use diversity in the running game. They use all 53.5 yards of the field, side to side, jet sweeps, all that stuff. But, Danny, I think one of the keys for K-State today is when they do pass the football, can they attack the secondary of Texas? That's where their weakness lies. Can you throw the football against them effectively, get some third down conversions, keep the drives alive? You know, that'll be a big factor in the game today.
Let's turn to the Kansas Jayhawks now, and they come off one of their most historic wins in the program's history so far, and it's only 2.5 years, obviously. We have seen Kansas with a couple of big wins, but have not been able to back them up. That's something that Lance Leipold addressed today. But they have the opportunity to go on the road and take on a first-place team. Iowa State has seemingly found their footing, but the opposition hasn't been the greatest. This game's a little bit tough to handicap. I think Iowa State's ready to, you know, be a tough out today. I am, frankly, worried for Kansas heading up to Ames today. Maybe I shouldn't be. As a Jayhawk, I hope I shouldn't be. But this one, to me, is a tough game to handicap.
Yeah, it really is, because I do think it's different going to Ames and playing there. There's something about it. I think, you know, even the grass is different than somebody you see on NFL surfaces or around the country. We're seeing the grass fields around the country, Danny, look like, what should I say, golf greens or the best fairways? I don't even know if I can say a fairway. That might even be too thick. So between the best fairways in the world and a green is what everyone's playing on. And Iowa State's grass is more old school. You know, it's not awful. It's a great surface, but it's a little bit longer. It's always a little bit colder. But the real thing about Iowa State, Danny, they play great defense. And this year there was all kinds of questions about their team coming into the season. That betting scandal, last year only one conference win. You just had to wonder what's going to happen with Iowa State. Are they going to slip below some of the new teams, you know, the UCFs of the world who could come in and Cincinnati? That was the question. And sure enough, they got off to a little bit of a slow start. They lost at Ohio. They could hardly score. They lost 10-7 at Ohio. Yes, they lost to Iowa again, 20-13. So what are they going to do? But what they did, Danny, and no one gave them credit at the time except for me. I told you, Danny, when I studied Oklahoma State and Iowa State, that those were two real football teams. Their records were awful. Everyone had written them off, but I was like, OSU is starting to play. And Iowa State covered them that day. How big a win does that look like right now, winning 34-27 against Oklahoma State? That's the only loss Oklahoma State has had in conference play. So Iowa State, what have they done? Well, they've continued to play great defense. That is so critical for them. And Rocco Beck, the freshman quarterback, ends up looking like a young Brock Purdy or something. He is so calm. His dad was an NFL player.
Right.
He seems to be just so comfortable playing at a high level. I would have never expected that going into the season. Their starting quarterback, Deckers, was in the gambling scandal and therefore not available to play. He was just trying to establish himself as a second-year starter. So quarterback play for Iowa State picked up. The physicality of Matt Campbell's team is there. I talked about that 5 weeks ago when they beat Oklahoma State. But the defense, Danny, you just cannot stop and spend enough time talking about how good they are. This football team is one of the best defenses in the league. They invented the 3-3-5. Okay, they are the ones who invented that, and they do a very good job with that. So today, I cannot wait to watch the battle of the great offensive coordinatorship and play of the Kansas Jayhawks against the great defensive coordinatorship and the defense of Iowa State. That is where I think the battle is going to be. Which one of those went out? And a home game at Iowa State is very, very tough. But there's no reason why we should just write this one off and act like Kansas is going to lose. They're too good for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they really have grown up. They didn't play a great game last week, Danny.
I know. They didn't.
They didn't play great, and they beat OU.
Right. And let's talk about the Jayhawks. They come into this one as a slight underdog. They are ranked. They're in the college football poll, and both the one that came out, and we'll talk about Bill Hancock about that. But
the college football playoff poll, Danny, came out this week on Tuesday.
That's right. And they've won three games in a row. And now it's time to, you know, insert yourself into the title race because there's a huge tie at the top, and Kansas is one game back at 3-2. A key to this game to me is what you talked about. Are they going to be able to run the football, which they are able to do just about against anybody and with anybody with their scheme? If they do that against Iowa State, they're going to be in good shape. If they don't, then the pressure switches to Jason Bean. And I talked about this yesterday on the program. I felt really good for Jason Bean at the end of the game. His teammates were, you know, congratulating him. He made the one big play. He was pretty bad most of the day, and he threw a couple bad interceptions, and you could tell that he knew he was struggling when he came off the field after they scored the big touchdown. It's almost like his teammates were consoling him as much as congratulating him, and he was able to get the victory and make the plays that led to it on a day where, as you said, Kansas didn't play great. He didn't play great, and he may have to play a lot better this year, this game, than he has so far this year.
But I think he has it in him. You know, that's the good news. I don't think you can physically put him on the line and make him run the football. I don't think he likes that. I don't think his passing game would be as good if you bruised him up. But if you could find a couple of plays where he could get a free line run,
yes,
you know, he is running at, you know, they claim at Tyreek Hill-like speed on that touchdown against Oklahoma. So he could hurt you running the football if he gets a straight line opportunity. But I don't think you can include him in the running game. It's going to be his passing game. But you look at what he did against Oklahoma State. Everyone wants to focus in on, oh, there was a interception here that really hurt the ball club, but how about his 400-yard passing and throwing off balance and throwing the deep ball accurately? I think it helped Kansas. You'd love to have Jalen Daniels playing. Okay, right. He was Big 12 preseason offensive player of the year voted by everyone, and he's hardly played in games. He's only been in three games. But I think everyone's settled around. The kind of emotion that you talked about after the ball game and the players coming up to him, I think they do that saying, you're a quarterback. Not, right. Hey, nice job as a backup. I think Kansas has cycled through that whole mentality. Does that mean that Jalen Daniels won't come back and won't be a factor? Heck, I don't know. I've not understood this at all. The back injuries, I don't understand. But I think the team, what happens in a football locker room now that you're in your eighth game, Danny, is he's our quarterback. And so I think that's good to settle down. Don't think of yourself as the best backup in the country. Just think of yourself as a starting quarterback who is making a run that could be significant and even keep you in the Big 12 championship race. All those things are in play, but he's going to need the running game. Like you said, Danny, that offensive line is getting a lot better. The physicality of the Kansas offensive line should be noted in a big-time way. They get after you. Their running backs, Devin Neal, Daniel Hyshaw, are different style backs, which help, but they're both very effective. The screen games, the trickeration that they have in their normal offense of getting the ball to the tight ends, and sometimes you're saying, how could they be that wide open? You know, will that happen? Will they be able to get the simple passing plays and the running plays going enough to let Jason Bean throw on his terms?
Right.
I think that you could make a game, you could make a case very easily. You don't have to mark him down like, oh, he's not very good. He's going to throw two interceptions. Danny, we could be here tonight easily thinking that he played a clean game. You know, no interceptions. So if you do that, if the running game can give you some balance and you can patiently take the options that you have throwing the football, then there's no reason why Kansas can't stand up and say, we're actually the better team than Iowa State. I have no problem saying that. But from Iowa State's perspective, they got to shut down the run, and they got the capability of doing that. They're very good against the run, Danny. This defense is so hard to figure out. Everyone's starting to use it and do it effectively, and they don't even have the depth of knowledge and time behind them that Iowa State does. When I study their defense, I can't tell who's going to be the guy who's going to have run support. You know, it depends on where the linemen go, where the ball goes, what defense is called. They come from everybody, and everybody's got to wear big boy shoulder pads for Iowa State, and they do a good job of that. So it's going to be a heck of a battle. I can't predict, like, is Kansas going to be able to run or not? Yeah, they could, but I can also see Iowa State slowing them down. If that happens, I think Jason Bean just needs to be patient, avoid turning it over, and don't worry about punting in this game. If Kansas gets in a high-scoring game, then it's always their advantage, I think.
Right.
But they can still be patient in this game and say, we'll beat you 17-14 if you want to, 20-17. Force Iowa State's freshman quarterback to make plays and drive the ball down the field. So this is a very intriguing game with so much at stake. We'll talk a little bit further about the Big 12 here, Danny, but there are five teams tied for first place in the Big 12. And because everybody doesn't have to play everybody else, you can start making the case with almost anybody's schedule. If they win this one important game, they're likely to win out and have a pretty good run to be in the Big 12 championship game. But today we have five teams with one loss, and four of those five are competing against each other head-to-head.
Mm-hmm.
So by definition, two of them are going to have two losses, and two of them are going to have big wins. The fifth team, the only one not in that little package of teams, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, K-State, Texas, is Iowa State, and they play Kansas.
Right.
And Kansas is right there. So today, when you look at the top of the Big 12, it is like they had a feature scheduling adjustment or something. They're like, hey, you know, like right now the NBA's got this in-season tournament.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the Big 12 said, well, why don't we just start November out with only our best teams going at it in these games? And that's what we got right here. There's a lot to happen, and KU could be a part of this. If they win, they'll have a tiebreaker over Iowa State and only two losses. Iowa State will have two. Two other teams will have two. And one of them with one may be K-State, and they play them head-to-head down the road at home. So KU can have dreams that are really big. But you said it early in our discussion here. What Kansas needs to do is not have a season finish like it did last year. Last year was
right.
Great. But they won five, lost, and then finally won a game to get to 6-6, right? What you need to do is go, no. We don't linger around 6-6. You know, we don't get off the good starts and then level off, get beat up, don't have the depth. No, we're going to play at a high level all the way through the end of the season, and that's why this game becomes important, because if you back up an OU win with an Iowa State win on the road, Danny, suddenly you'd say our program has launched itself to the top of the Big 12. And with Oklahoma and Texas leaving to the SEC next year, it is wide open about who's going to be good at football. It is wide open. And they just set out the schedules for the next 4 years. And it's crazy. When you look at it with 16 teams and you're only playing nine conference games, you look around, you're going, we're missing a ton of the teams. I mean, your schedule could drive you to a very good record next year.
Yes.
Very easily.
And we're going to talk a little bit about the Big 12. It's sort of an A and a B card, as Stan mentioned. There's three games with the bottom teams, featuring the bottom teams against each other, and then there's three games with the top teams. And your Big 12 update and report is brought to you by Hen House. Your local neighborhood market has you covered this weekend with these great specials from the Butcher Block. USDA Choice Certified Hereford Beef Boneless Ribeye Steak, 12 ounce, only $13 each, or $16.99 a pound. Fresh 85% lean ground beef, ground fresh several times daily, just $4.59 a pound. You get your top round roast and London broil for only $4.99 a pound, and Prairie Fresh boneless pork chops, only $2.99 a pound, or IQF snow crab clusters, 5 or 8 count, $7.99 a pound. That's good through the weekend through November 7th. And we'll talk a lot about this a little bit later with my man Todd Lebo, because he's obviously involved in this as an OU guy. But Bedlam is the other big game of the day, and Oklahoma State has really sort of mirrored Iowa State. You talked about it. That game sort of set these teams on the proper course. And Oklahoma, they really conspired to help Kansas out last week. I couldn't believe the pressure that they allowed on the quarterback on their last drive with only three men rushing for Kansas. Oh, you had to be super disappointed. They often win Bedlam. This is another intriguing matchup.
It really is. When we started the year, Danny, and I had to make a guess with 14 teams, not playing everybody, like who would be there to be the two teams in the Big 12 championship game? And I said, well, I think Texas has the best talent, Steve Sarkisian. There's no reason why Quinn Ewers isn't going to be better. Let's put Texas in there. And then I said, K-State defending champions, all these players back. Obviously, I'm going to include them in the mix. And then I started looking at the schedules. I'm going, oh, my gosh, Oklahoma's schedule. I don't even have to question, like, did they struggle enough last year that they can't bounce back and get to the top? The schedule's laid out so perfectly. There's no way they're not going to win. Down the line, Arkansas State, SMU, at Tulsa, at Cincinnati, Iowa State at home. I mean, other than Texas, I knew OU was going to get on a run. So here we are. But the other team that I put in there, Danny, is Oklahoma State, because Mike Gundy is that consistent in winning 18 straight years with winning records. I thought his football team would bounce back and be a part of it, and I also thought the schedule would be nice. Well, guess where we are right now? No one would trade in the Big 12 for OSU would never trade with anybody with their schedule. You look at what everyone has left. Think about this. They got Oklahoma today at Bedlam. How mad are they that Oklahoma's leaving them to the SEC? How mad are they that this series is ending and OU thinks they're too good and going on to the SEC, and they got them at home? But, Danny, if they win this game, mm-hmm. they got at UCF, at Houston, and BYU. No one has a schedule better than that down the stretch. So today, Oklahoma State could probably punch their ticket to be in the Big 12 championship game if they can beat Oklahoma. What are they doing well? Alan Bowman, they decided that he was going to be the starting quarterback in that Iowa State game, and they haven't looked back. He started to play better. They're starting to open up their offense. But what really hit is they were rotating three running backs until that Iowa State game, and then they stuck with Ollie Gordon. Danny, Ollie Gordon is now putting himself in the Heisman Trophy running. He has over 1,000 yards rushing, and he really didn't kick off the year very well because they were playing Jaden Nixon and Elijah Collins as much as him. So this Oklahoma State team is so well coached. They have really taken the bit right now. But you mentioned something that's critical. And I know Todd, for the first time that I've known him, is not speaking in these terms. So I can't wait to hear you and Todd talk about this, because when Oklahoma State's good and they have a home game against Oklahoma and it sets up that everything should go their way and they should be mad, it never works out. Barry Sanders, here we go. Barry Sanders, Heisman Trophy, Danny, 1988. Oh, darn it. Oklahoma comes up and wins. Oklahoma State's only won 19 times in the history of the series, home or away. So you got to shake your head and go, what about that Sooner magic? Will it happen today? But I think Kansas shook Oklahoma. Oklahoma State's really good. Maybe Oklahoma State should get over the hump. I would pick Oklahoma State if there wasn't all this history that OSU always finds a way to lose to Oklahoma. So I'm not going to be surprised if that happens, but they have it really set up. Everyone wrote them off. When K-State was down there, they'd lost to South Alabama at home. They'd lost at Iowa State. They had quarterbacks rolling through, including the coach's son. They were saying Mike Gundy ought to be let go as the coach. That's what they were telling me when I went down there on that Friday night. And now if OSU wins today, they are highly likely to be in the Big 12 championship game. Oh, by the way, Danny, for the second time in 3 years. They were there 2 years ago. So giant games today, going to be a lot of fun, a lot at stake, because Oklahoma does not want to lose before they go to the SEC. But last week I told you the key to the game was Dylan Gabriel. Remember that before the KU game?
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Gabriel. How would he play? He was only 14 of 19, 171 yards. You pointed out very well, contributing actors, leading role, offensive line not blocking for him. Okay? But it's hard to function when they're not blocking for you, because I could not believe the pressure KU was putting on with a three-man rush at the end of the game either. It was unbelievable. OU looked shaken at the end of the game. Kansas looked like the calm team. Will Dylan Gabriel put the team on his back today? That's what he's going to have to do. He did it against Texas. He did not do it against Kansas.
Right.
I think the pressure squarely on him again, because I think OSU is more solid from A to Z this year right now.
Stan, appreciate the breakdown of the Big 12, and we'll continue, Stan and I, with Bill Hancock, the executive director of the College Football Playoff. He's our guest next on College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB.